This is the Institute for Music Leadership. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Create, Inspire, Lead, a podcast from Eastman School of Music's IML office. My name is Stephen Bigner, and I will be your de facto host. You know, we'd actually been planning a podcast since at least the beginning of the fall semester. One of our wonderful student workers, Melissa O'Hara, she'd been doing all this research into things like equipment we'd need. She was brainstorming various topics, reaching out to guests. We had planned to do a call for scores to create a theme song. We thought about reaching out to a local artist to create artwork for the podcast. We were being thoughtful, methodical, diligent. And then COVID-19 happened. And so I'm here, in my guest bedroom / music room / home office, with a loaner laptop, a USB mic my wife and I sometimes use to record choral parts for these practice recordings we do, and, well, this is it. We hope that, moving forward, we can bring you interviews, stories, quick tips from a variety of guests from within the Institute for Music Leadership, as well as from Eastman faculty and outside experts, but today, for the first episode, I thought we could talk about the elephant in the room. The elephant that is now confined to its room. Of course, I'm talking about us, stuck inside, unable to meet with friends and colleagues, to make music, to live out our purpose. And if you're anything like me, there's been a real mix of emotions. Sometimes the introverted, antisocial version of me is secretly a little happy to be stuck inside. I've been listening to music like crazy. I get to spend more time with my son and my wife. But other times, I just feel racked with anxiety. It's hard to focus, to stay driven. And I wonder, why am I doing this? So today I thought we could talk to two people, Dr. Blair Kerner and Dr. Eric Laprade. Blair is the career advisor for the IML, and Eric is the managing editor of the Paul R. Judy Center for Innovation and Research, which is also part of the IML. They're also both alums of Eastman. Blair's a bassoonist, and Eric is a conductor. And they collaborated on putting together all of these resources for musicians who've been affected by the pandemic. I figured it would be good to talk with each of them to get their perspective on what we can be doing now. Also, quick note, because we had to do these interviews over Zoom, the quality of the audio is not always as high as we'd like it to be. So for future episodes, we'll be looking into how we can realistically improve these issues. But for now, please bear with us. If you take a look at the list of resources that Blair and Eric put together, one of the first things you'll notice right away is how extensive the list is. And that's the first thing that I decided to talk to Blair about.
So, you know, in scanning through it, it's a lot, which is helpful, but it's also a little, it can feel overwhelming. Where do you recommend students start?
Great question. I think it starts with what's their situation. So if they are a performer, a freelancer, or even a teacher as a student who has lost their income because of these things, whether it's because they had to go back home and they don't have the gigs that they were planning, or because their, you know, assistantship is no longer functioning properly because of their situation. So the first thing is kind of assessing where they are currently. And if they need funding, if they need relief, if they need some sort of support, there is a boatload out there. Yes, there are bigger packages that the government has passed through. We just don't know the timing for those. We also, you know, there is a lot of details behind that, and they're going to be bigger than some of these $200, $300 offerings that some of these other organizations are offering. But it's worth looking and seeing, where can I apply? What is valuable to me? The second thing I believe would be keep on top of what is happening. So when you can, read your, messages that are being sent by the university, read the messages that are being sent by the news, because right now everything's in a state of flux, and it will be for a little while. So checking into the American Musicians Federation, the union, because they are also highlighting and specifically focusing on music-related situations, music-related concepts. So just trying to keep up with that type of news. So if anything does come around, you are aware of it, you can move forward, and you can get curious and explore it.
Blair gave a lot of incredible information, and there's a lot to unpack in there. But after talking with Blair and Eric, I noticed they each said specific things repeatedly throughout their interviews. We'll get to Eric's, but for Blair, it's how many times she mentions staying curious.
Get curious, curious, being curious.
See? We'll hear those in context a bit later, but right now, I thought it would be interesting to hear what Eric had to say to a similar question. We had some technical issues at
Hello.
The beginning of
Hi,
the
Eric.
Interview.
How are you?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Just give me 1 second.
Yeah, sure. I'm also just opening
10 seconds starting now.
Sorry, my Siri thing keeps going.
Oh, that's all right.
Eric is the director of bands and an assistant professor at the College of New Jersey, or TCNJ. And he's also the managing editor for the Paul R. Judy Center for the IML. He's been putting together some really great blog posts with resources, links to videos, thoughts on what's important right now. I thought he'd also have a laundry list of things to go over, and I mean, he does, but here's how he answered the question of where to start.
Sure. I mean, it's... I think nobody knows, to be honest. I mean,
that's, yeah.
I think it's hard to even still, I mean, I wrote down a note that said, like, trying to move through or get beyond sort of like the initial like triage and shock of what has happened. And try to start to think, well, what's next? How do I respond and react to this? And I quite frankly, I think that's really hard to do. And, that in itself is overwhelming.
Honestly, that was so refreshing to hear. It's so easy to feel alone or like you're overreacting to the situation, and maybe you're neither of those things, but for me, 4-5 weeks into working remotely with a wife who is also a DMA student and a 2-year-old who is pure id, these conversations were just what I needed. Essentially, throughout these interviews, both Blair and Eric lifted me up in different ways. Blair helped me create a path forward, gave me action items and confidence that I wouldn't end up falling behind or stagnating. Eric helped me see hope in the situation and honestly just commiserated a little bit. Like, here's him talking about what it's been like writing for the PRJC blog.
And the type of work, you know, we typically do, we might share, like, might write about programming, we might write about using technology or profile innovative artists. And even then I was feeling this pressure of like, this all feels irrelevant. Like, how can I possibly write a blog post in good faith about like best programming practices when the world felt like it was crumbling around us, and the speed at which our lives have been upended, I'm still processing, struggling with it. I see it in our students at the college where I teach. Like, this is incredibly traumatic. These students who are working day in and day out towards like this goal they have, to learn that you no longer can attend classes, that you can't be in the same room and create music together, things that are like integral to us as human beings. I mean, I feel a giant void personally because I'm not, conducting on a regular basis. It's something I've done almost every day for the last 15 years. And then out of nowhere, I'm sitting here staring at a computer screen for 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
This made me think about something that Blair had said.
So how can you continue developing your skill sets performance-wise, doing projects with one another, doing recording projects you've been meaning to do, but have been not doing them? And then, of course, acknowledging that you may need to also find a position that is just going to hold you over.
This would happen throughout our interview. Blair would formulate the question for me and, of course, had an answer. One thing you could do is use this situation we've all been thrust into to add skills to your resume.
So when you have a resume that's a non-performance-based resume, we're putting off to the side because that's a unique situation. So if you have a teaching, an administrative, a composition even, there's a lot of different categories, but one of them that I always insist and you always put at the bottom at least is a skills category. And yes, soft skills are absolutely 100% important, but soft skills are something that you can incorporate into bullets of other experiences. So leadership, organizational, communication. These skill sets are really the hard skills. So what equipment do you know? And that could be software, that could be hardware, but what do you know? So yes, Microsoft Suite, Excel, that type of thing. So technology is one of those skill sets. Languages is another. But technology is one of those things that you can keep building. So at this point, a lot of us are getting very familiar with Zoom. Awesome. However, attending a Zoom session is a little bit different than running one. So how about you practice running one, putting people in breakout rooms, understanding how to share things, anything special, so you really get it familiar.
Blair mentioned a few other platforms, GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, even Skype and Google Hangouts. But Zoom? I'm sure you're familiar. Zoom added more video conferencing users in the past few weeks than it did in all of 2019 because of coronavirus. According to a CNBC article, Zoom added over 2.22 million new users so far in 2020. Over the entirety of 2019, it managed to bring in 1.99 million people. Again, so far in 2020, 2.22 million new users. It's April. But as Blair mentions, even if you're familiar with some of these products, there's still a lot you can learn and use to your benefit.
There is a lot of free materials on their own websites and training on their own websites of how to use their equipment. So that's a first way to start and really understand that. See what's popular. There's a lot of talk right now of Zoom and things because they are university-based, but Zoom is not used in a lot of other organizations because the license may be too expensive. So what are the alternative version. Find that list of alternatives. Feel which ones you're comfortable that you can have access to. Most of them are free, not all of them. Or if they are free, they have some sort of limitation on it. Play around with it, experiment, hang out with friends through it, hang out with family, do a project, see the limitations and understand. And then you can mention that in your resume. You can mention that in a cover letter. You can mention that in an email to an employer who is currently thinking about stopping your position. And you could say, well, an alternative, which make this position an online version. And here's what skills I happen to have in that position. You know, how would that help you with your progress and your projects?
This last bit is important. Part of the fight has always been to show how you're relevant to a group or organization, whether this is a chamber group or an administrative position or whatever, but it seems urgently critical now. So you might have some skills already that organizations are now suddenly finding they need to possess.
I mean, I think music teachers have unknowingly entered the world of video editing and production because there's this urge or this desire to want to try to cultivate shared performances. So I shared a post, I shared a blog post this Monday. It was just a curated list of virtual orchestra performances. And quite frankly, in five clicks, you could hear New York Philharmonic, Toronto Symphony, San Antonio Symphony, ranging from Bolero, Baltimore Symphony played some Mahler together. And so it's fascinating to, again, think about how quickly times have changed.
All of those organizations who put these videos together, sure, some of them are maybe big enough to have someone on staff already who would have done it anyway. But for some smaller organizations, if you're involved, they may not know that you're great at recording or that you have a YouTube channel and know all this video editing software. They might even need someone who just understands Twitter or Instagram. This is crucial now, But moving forward, it's still a great thing to have on your resume. In addition to working on your resume and learning new skills, it's also a great time to work on some projects you've had on the back burner for a while. Like Blair said earlier.
Doing projects with one another, doing recording projects you've been meaning to do, but have been not doing them.
I had had this crazy idea, both to kill time and to stay in shape musically, that my wife and I could record all of Monteverdi's Vespers, including singing all the instrumental parts. I was gonna brush up on my horribly rudimentary Italian, go through sight singing books, and Eric had similar ideas.
I can share that, like, on March 7th, or whatever date it was, when TCNJ shared that we're moving online, and my initial thought was, oh my goodness, I'm gonna have so much time to, to practice, study, develop, grow. I made a list of these projects. I secured the rights for a new transcription I've been wanting to do. I have plans, and I mean the list. It was inspiring. And then reality sets in of okay, now I'm like stuck in my apartment. I'm like struggling with motivations. And so now you're, waking up and going to class is like getting up from your bed and walking to your desk. And then you have to go to the practice room, which is the chair right next to your desk. And I think that can be tough to maintain that sort of rigor when you're just in a different space.
So what can you do?
I've been encouraging my students to, we have to find some sort of silver lining or hope or positive element to what is a terrible situation. And so I've been encouraging students, think about your core musicianship.
When Eric talks about core musicianship, he's not joking around. Later in our interview, he mentions how he's assigned his conducting students exercises from Hindemith's Elementary Training for Musicians. Nice, innocuous title, right? Let me see if I have a copy. It should be... Yeah. Here it is. Oh, man. I don't think there's a single copy of this book that hasn't been, like, chucked across a room in frustration in existence. So, anyway, first thing... Paul Hindemith's headshot, he's truly terrifying. He looks like a chained up junkyard bulldog who eats his students. He's horrifying. But the other thing is that this book goes from tap these quarter notes to play this rhythm in your left hand, tap this one in another meter in your right hand, and sing this atonal melody, then switch all the parts in a matter of pages. It's intense. Anyway, unnecessary digression. Back to Eric.
I've encouraged students to set specific discrete goals, set specific discrete schedules, and to find mechanisms to hold themselves accountable. And so whether that's sharing via social media performances, whether that's cultivating an online recital, whether that's saying I'm going to apply for these festivals and or go through these audition processes virtually, whatever it might be. I'm going to record an album. I'm going to compose the new piece. I mean, I think trying to develop some sort of project based or benchmarks to work to, I always find helpful.
Yes, absolutely. Continue moving ahead, right? So eventually this will die down. Eventually we will be hopefully COVID free. You still want to keep moving forward with plans. You still want to keep applying. You still want to be curious and explore.
Here's Blair again, reminding you to stay curious and keep moving ahead. For example, if you apply to summer festivals,
you may get accepted. And then it gets canceled, or you may get accepted and it turns to an online virtual position, or you may get accepted and gets postponed. But at least you got accepted because you tried, right? So you don't know what the options are. A lot of organizations are doing their best to try and do something rather than do nothing. So, the Eastman Community Music School this summer, I mean, they have a summer camp and they're trying, and they really are hoping that it will go. They will prefer to do an online and try to do as many classes and opportunities online as they possibly can, then do canceling altogether. because they'd rather offer some sort of experience than nothing. So keep applying, keep looking forward, keep looking at things. We don't know the trickle-down effect. So you have to keep active, you have to keep looking, you have to keep being curious. But some of those positions may be altered, changed, removed, or not hired at all together just because of the fact that the organization doesn't have the funding anymore.
Shortly after this was recorded, ECMS announced that it would move all of their summer courses online. So far we've covered that this is a difficult situation, but we've talked about how we can still work on skills to improve our resumes. We can work on our musicianship and come up with a schedule and clear goals, and we should keep moving forward, apply to festivals, cultivate online recitals, and perhaps this is an obvious one, but
create art as much as you can in this situation. Create music, create beautiful music, and share it. We're storytellers, right? And now the storyteller is locked in an 8x8 room with hard to share that story. So finding ways to connect with people.
That's consistently Eric's takeaway. And I find that really inspiring and hopeful. But while it might be the ideal to use this time to better ourselves and create art, this whole situation is not without its challenges.
One of the things that this situation has acknowledged is there are lots of barriers with it, right? So not everyone, especially even faculty, had equipment when they were sent off to then go and do online classes, right? So students are in another similar situation, potentially, as well as all the other ones that you mentioned. So one of the things I am getting out of this is a lot of people are being incredibly generous, whether it's with a mindset, whether it's with lending things, whether it's with flexibility. So you don't know until you ask. You don't know until you try.
This was totally my situation. I had this old laptop from like 2007, and it was like computer adjacent in its identity. At this point, it was so slow. It took forever to do anything. And so, long story short, I let my colleagues know, and the team worked together to make sure everyone could do their work remotely. And we're still figuring it out, but you can do the same thing for your own job or for classes. You could come up with a schedule with your boss to check in at the beginning and the end of your shift, or maybe let your teacher know you can't do a bunch of recordings throughout the day. Or
a phone call, right? We're so technology-based, but phone calls, if you have a phone, let's do that instead as well, you know? So you don't know until you ask. So reaching out and saying, here's my current situation. This is what I'm asking of you, whether that be flexible of time. And if you're in a different time zone, that may be okay. So what is a good time that we can both check in? And then understanding that in a normal situation, your supervisor wouldn't necessarily be in the same room with you the entire 8 hours, 6 hours that you'd be working anyway. They maybe will have the opportunity to walk by and check in on you, and you can ask a quick question, which now is unfortunately gone. But figure out what communications would work for them. Is it okay for an email? Is it okay for a follow-up phone call? Even some people are going through text to really get a quick message across. See what's viable for them. See if they have equipment that they may be able to lend to you. See if you can have a conversation and where are they currently and how can you help them? That's really the best way to put it too, is how can I help your business currently, your organization currently move forward in a difficult situation? And here are the skills that I have to offer. And in return, all I would ask is to fill in the blank.
In addition to issues of access, whether that's reliable internet or an issue with your living situation, your time zone, there are also issues of how to navigate all the various funding websites. What are we eligible for in terms of making up income from gigs that have been canceled? And on top of that, what about grades?
Is it worth it for students to sit down and just sort of plug through all of those, if they need the resources, to plug through all of those applications? For, you know, $100 here, $200 there, to try to cobble something together? Or is there a limit?
Because they're all on all the different types of organizations, I don't see that there's a limit. Now, they may be asking, where else are you applying or getting support funds? I haven't gone that depth into.
Okay.
But a lot of them are also different. So like there's the early music one, And then there's a contemporary chamber one and so forth. So how many are you actually?
Some of them are crazy specific.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to go through and be like, this one looks appropriate. And it's also realizing that in that list now, maybe a handful of them are closed because the applications have been submitted. But do what you can to see what you can get because you just don't know.
When I said some are crazy specific, here's an example. There's a Blues Foundation site for blues musicians who have been affected, a fund for music producers, one for contemporary arts, one for early music, one for gospel music, one for Southern musicians whose tours were canceled, a fund for elderly musicians who need help specifically with medical bills. Yeah, it's a lot, but it's not unmanageable. I'll link to these lists and other resources on the IML's career page in the show notes. If you've had any gigs canceled, hopefully one of these will help you out. But as students, you may also be wondering what your transcript will look like if it has a few courses with pass-fail grades. Will it affect your GPA? Should you take a letter grade instead? And when I asked Blair, she recommended to do what makes you comfortable. Do what you're able to in your personal situation. And that's the point of changing to this system. Some of us maybe have to care for sick relatives or don't have a good practice space or access to good internet at home. So pass-fail allows us to continue learning without the added pressure of having our grades docked for circumstances outside our control. But if you're someone who wants to know your grade or be able to show that grade in a transcript, you have that option. And it's about options. But it's also important to remember.
Hopefully there will be some grace and flexibility and understanding and looking back at this whole transcripts thing. So whether they're applying for another program, whether they're applying for a faculty position where they ask for all transcripts you've ever had. But there's usually some sort of area and opportunity to explain something, whether that's a personal statement when you're applying to a graduate program or in a cover letter, you are allowed to explain things.
So I used to work in admissions. And I can say this is totally true and can sometimes be really important. If I saw a weird blip in someone's transcripts, I'd maybe try to reach out to a reference or the school to find out if there was a larger reason behind it. Or I'd check the file to see if there was an additional statement. Maybe someone got sick or suffered the loss of a loved one. Admissions counselors, hiring managers, whoever, they're human beings on the other end. It's very likely they're affected by the situation as well, so weigh that, too, when you're figuring out what to do. But despite all of the challenges this situation has brought to light, Eric focused on what all of these issues reaffirm for us as musicians.
My perspective is, this is what, 3 weeks into online teaching and online wind ensemble, is I've learned a lot, and I've definitely, it cost me to rethink how I operate, how I sort of structure things. But I will say I also, haven't found a way to replace that human in-person, that element of music making. And if anything, it's reaffirmed for me the value and importance of it.
Eric spoke a lot about various things other organizations were doing to try to bridge that gap between all the new virtual things they were having to do and the fact that they were missing these in-person interactions, whether it was sending in parts recorded to a backing track to assemble a performance, to maintaining a staff or faculty coffee hour so people could just decompress, which made me think of a question.
What do you think we'll bring forward once we can get back together, or what do you hope we bring forward from this experience?
Sure. I can answer quickly and say I will never take for granted the opportunity to make music together with somebody, with another human being. And I will cherish every single one of those moments. I hope that this whole experience is like, it just has shown what's important, what's not important, beyond music, in my opinion, too. And I hope our society is humbled by it. But here's maybe a thing I took away from Eastman. You're there like to develop your craft, and become the most compelling artist possible. And at the end of the day, though, it's the relationships that I think are most important. And it's through art, through music making, that bring these things, that bring us together. So this experience for me has like quadruple reaffirmed that belief in the power of you know, relationships.
I had recorded all of this stuff with Blair and Eric about how they've been affected personally, and of course they have. Blair has lost a bunch of sub gigs in various orchestras. She has an amazing bassoon and harp duo that's been affected. And Eric would do conducting clinics, work at a few summer festivals. Even I've lost some income for this choral workshop that my wife and I always work at as part of an early music festival. But yes, the lost income is hard, but what's harder is the fact that we don't get to make that music that we'd been hoping to make. We won't get to see friends, colleagues, some we maybe only see at these summer gigs, or only when that certain ensemble gets together. To me, all of the things that Blair and Eric shared are so helpful and practical, and it's good to have things to work on, to keep busy, to keep moving forward and developing, but all of this feels like it comes back to one common theme.
It's been amazing for me in reaffirming to feel and sense the sort of relevance and purpose of what we do. Just imagine, though, that first time you are back together. Hopefully it's, you know, in the summer, hopefully it's in June. It could be in December for all we know, but just imagine that time when you are finally back as a chamber ensemble, as an ensemble, that first downbeat and, you know, the purpose and fire and passion and drive that's going to be in that room. And so I think for me, that's something to like work towards or to sort of stay inspired is to remember that, you know, that we will get through this. And again, that I'm too young to have the wisdom to say, we will get through this, but I mean, we have to believe that, I think. I mean, you have to know that, you know, we will navigate this, we will come out stronger, and our art will feel more compelling and relevant than ever. Deus in adiutorium meum intende.
Special thanks to Dr. Blair Kerner and Dr. Eric LaPrade for talking with me for so long. There's so much we talked about that I didn't get to include here. They were just incredible to talk to and so generous with their time and resources. If you want to get in touch with Blair, you can either set up an appointment via Handshake, or you can send her an email at bkerner@ur.rochester.edu. And you can find Eric's PRJC blog posts on the PRJC page of the IML website. He's also offered to talk with students, so I'll include his email, as well as Blair's and any other contact links, in the episode description. Thanks also to Melissa O'Hara, who did so much prep work for this podcast. I'm sorry that she didn't get to finish working on it, but it was a huge help and will be a great resource once we all come back from this. Thanks, Melissa. And this music? This is the Monteverdi project that my wife and I are working on. Here it is in all its embarrassing glory. Go out, make art, and keep working. Again, I'm Stephen Bigner from the Institute for Music Leadership. If you have any comments or questions, topics you're interested in, you can email the IML. All of our contact information and other programming we offer is on our website at iml.esm.rochester.edu. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.